Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Above the Bar podcast, where each week we belly up to the bar with a new guest, find out what they do, who they are, and what makes them great. So sit back, relax, and enjoy. Alrighty, folks, welcome back to the Above the Bar podcast. It's your host, Sean. It is the first Wednesday in April. We have passed April Fool's Day. While I have a moment here, I'm going to just quickly say happy anniversary to my wife. We got married on April 1st, so happy anniversary to her. We're coming up on 1 year with our sponsor, Budget Blinds. We'll talk about them here in a moment. But as always, before we get going here, and I forgot to mention to our guest before we got going that I have no rhyme or reason. Hey, Tom, I'm not even going to start with your BS. Like, he's already starting. It's already going. Listen to me. You and I have had this conversation for 8 hours on trains. We'll have it again right here tonight. So before we get going, joining us from, and he's almost there to the May grays and the June glooms, but he's avoiding it for right now. Out in the, well, I think we determined in Anchorman, he referred to it as the whale's vagina. Joining us all the way in San Diego, it's Dr. Jason Wiggins.
Great to be here.
Now, Doc, I have to ask you real quick. Did my audio come through properly? Did you hear my sound effect?
I did. I feel like I was in a live session.
I want to make sure. So Doc is joining us. We're going to be talking tonight about how to motivate millennials and Gen Zs. It's pretty simple in my book. Start beating them more often as children. But Doc says I'm wrong. So we'll go from there and we'll see how this all works and see what we can figure out. But before we get too far, let's go ahead and get some house cleaning done, folks. As always, over my right shoulder, we got the big board for Sticker and a Cause. You've got something you're supporting, a band, a group, whatever it happens to be, and you want people to know about it, make sure you're taking the time and sending us a message on Facebook, LinkedIn, YouTube, Twitter, or YouTube, X, Twitch, Instagram, Facebook, all those places. Send us a message. Let us know what you got going on. We'll go ahead and read your stuff live on the air. You send me a sticker and we put it on the big board. For those of you that have already joined us live, please take a moment, share this out. What's up, Joseph? Make sure you take a moment, share this out to all your social media. Let everybody know what we got going on. That's how this all gets found. The more you share it, the more people know. Who cares what yard sale site you're on? No one cares. They'll let you back in. Trust me, they want you there. And then finally, let's talk about our sponsors. That's Budget Blinds of East Greenbush and Budget Blinds of Hudson and Coxsackie, New York. They are a California-born company. There you go there, Doc. You know, California-born company. They've been around for over 30 years now. They are North America's largest window treatment company, focusing on everything from shutters, blinds, shades. They can handle any shape that you've got. So make sure you're reaching out to Budget Blinds of East. Well, reach out to your local one. But if you're in the capital region, reach out to Budget Blinds of East Greenbush and Budget Blinds of Hudson and Coxsackie, New York. You let them know you're there to belly up to the bar to get some new window treatments. They're going to go ahead and give you 15% off your entire order. And Doc, you're in that same house that everybody's been in for a while. I'm going to say this is probably like the new cool house. There's no window treatments on it. Did you notice that?
We didn't call the right people.
You didn't call your local Budget Blinds, and now it looks like you're in a fishbowl.
That's true. Thank you for noticing.
So, all right, folks, we're going to get into it here with Doc. We're going to be talking about, like I said, how to get millennials and how to get Gen Z motivated. If you're interested in anything that we're talking about, if you're just joining us, make sure you're checking JasonWigginsPhD.com, Wiggins 2Gs.com with an S at the end of Wiggins. Make sure I got some of this right here. 2 decades of shaping future leaders, as we said, you're dealing with millennials and Gen Zs, and we're gonna verify for all the people full of hate and discontent in a moment here. What is a Gen Z? What is a millennial? When did that start? And let's see, you wrote, you have the book, how to retain and motivate millennial leaders. And the let's see, what else? Am I missing anything? I'm just going through my notes, making sure I'm not missing nothing. And then you also have the Gen Z and Millennial Expert.com. Did I get it all, Doc?
And I also have a podcast as well, Your Motivational Gen Z and Millennial Expert.
So, and look, I just want you to know that, and look at Aaron with his roll tie. He's a millennial. Tom's a millennial. They're good friends of mine. Aaron's got an amazing podcast. We'd have to grow your beard. Can you grow a beard out there, Doc?
No, I can't.
I can't get you on Aaron's show then. It's all about.
No.
You'd have to be able to grow. If you could grow a beard, Aaron would take you.
It might take me 2 years to grow a couple stubbles.
So, all right, I want to start there with that part of the conversation, because I think this is a big argument where there's like that cusp of the millennial where they don't want to be called a millennial. But what is a millennial? Let's start there.
All right. Well, first of all, I'm going to really quickly go over the generations just so everybody knows what a millennial, what a Gen Z is. And I'll even go back to the older folks a little bit.
Whoa, don't call us old. We're not old.
Oh, no. Older than us folks. So going back to up to 1945, were known as the traditionalists. And those were basically the ones born during World War II. Then from about 1946 to 1964 was the baby boomers. Everybody's heard about the baby boomers. And, you know, they were the ones that, you know, were married for most of their lives with their spouses. And then Gen X, they kind of started to change things. Yep, same here. Gen X
Gen X.
1965 to 1979, depending on which one you're looking at. Some have it up to 82, 83. But the way I look at it, it goes up to 1979. Then the millennials or Gen Y started about 1980.
Gen Y? I've never heard that.
Gen Y, millennials go hand in hand.
Interesting.
Yes. So then from 1980 to about 1996 is the millennials. From about 1997 to about 2012 is the Gen Zs. And then from 2013 to now is Generation Alpha. So that's the breakdown of the generations and between the millennials and the Gen Z that gets a little bit dicey.
So, all right. Look, folks, you've heard it from a definitive leadership. If you were born in 1980s, you're a millennial. Suck it up, buttercup. I don't want to hear anything about, I knew how to switch TV channels and stand up. You're not a Generation X where, let me ask this before we get into millennials and the Gen Z. What made Generation X, and in my opinion, because I am a Generation X, but what made us so different, I feel like, than the boomer generation, than the Pepsi generation, then the millennials? Like, I feel like we're very different than all of them.
We are. We're hard-headed. We can be difficult at times, but we're independent. And the reason why that is, we were the first generation, also known as the latchkey kids, because we were the first generation that really began the experience realizing our parents don't like each other and they don't have to stay together if they don't want to. So that made us more independent. And that's kind of where we shifted from the baby boomers who grew up with parents that hated each other all their lives. And that was okay. But Gen X had enough. Or excuse me, we had to start dealing with our parents breaking up and divorcing. So that's why you started seeing a difference in previous generations where they all stayed together. And then we experienced it as children. Hey, guess what? Now my mommy and daddy don't live together no more. That was the big difference. And then we became more independent. And that's where we can talk a little later. That's kind of where it leads to where we've seen millennials and Generation Z continue to mold. And the other big difference is our parents, our baby boomer parents, worked all their lives for one organization. But guess what? Organizations stopped having loyalty, and after 20 years, started laying individuals off. And that left a bad taste in Generation X, our generation.
Because we saw it.
Yep. And that's kind of where it all started, the loyalty factor. And it's kind of went downhill since.
It's interesting you bring up. So that gets into our generation seeing mom and dad get laid off, you know, hearing those things as we grew up, watching the crashes in the 80s where, you know, people talk about 2007, 2008, but you didn't see in 1980s where tax laws changed drastically, affecting the way people save, the way people put their money away. Y'all can love Reagan all you want. I'm sorry. Go back and take a look at that dude. He might have got a wall tore down, but he did not help the economy. Reaganomics sucked. Trickle down my ass. But moving on here, because that's a personal thing. But so how did, but that also put Gen X, our generation, in charge of or in leadership roles over millennials and Zs. And I think that's part of what we're going to talk about right now is how challenging it is for us as it's, I love it when you said latchkey kid. I was a latchkey kid. I'd love to know how many people were listening, had a shoestring tied around their neck with a key on it, because that's how you were going to get in and out of your house. No push button locks or no shit like that. You had a key on a shoestring around your neck, and you probably lost it about 15 times. And your mother was like, "I'm not getting another key. Where's that key at?" And all of them were somehow in the bottom of your book bag, never to be found again.
Or under the doormats.
Like you could leave a key under a doormat. It was not a big deal. Or you had your buddy like, "I know this window's always unlocked. Help me get in the house. My mom could be so mad when she finds out I can't find the key." But what challenges then, you know, because, and folks, as we're talking, if you want to check out what Jason's got going on, it's jasonwigginsphd.com. See what he's got going on. But I'm curious, how has what you talked about, that independence of the Generation X and that baby boomer generation, who's kind of, I think they're pretty much, well, there's still some, but they're pretty well out of the leadership roles anymore in business. Most are retiring at large swaths. They're more in like volunteer or consultative roles. They're not really in those leadership roles the same way. What are some of the things that you tell Gen X? And if I'm jumping too far ahead, Doc, pause me right there. But what are some of the challenges that you're seeing for an Xer trying to raise that? It won't just go with the letters, the Ys and the Zs.
Yeah. And the key part really is you can't manage them like you would manage a Generation X, a baby boomer, because with those two generations, you could tell them to jump and they'll ask how high. But if you ask a millennial or a Gen Z to jump, they're not going to ask you how high. They're going to say, why? What's in it for me? How is this going to motivate me? How is this going to be good for me? And they're going to ask a lot of questions, because Gen X and baby boomers, we would take it at face value for the most part, and we would do what the boss said. Why? Because the boss signs our checks and we do as they ask us. So that's kind of where things started to shift a little bit with millennials.
Why don't you think, what was it that we did as parents or the baby boomer parent that had the later children that thought, well, I'm going to have my career first and then have kids. What is it that you think that they did that caused that X or that Y and Z gen, that millennial and Gen Z, to lose that ability to let me do what I'm supposed to do first and then ask questions?
That's a great question. That's actually one other thing I didn't bring up when you asked me the difference between Gen X and millennials. It's our parents, the baby boomers, they had us, Gen X's, when they were young. So they were just getting out of high school, getting into their party years, and didn't use protection. And therefore, they were popping out little Gen X's.
Little us's.
And guess what happens is, you know, they just basically, they didn't coddle us. But what we started seeing, we wanted to do something different as, you know, Gen Xers and maybe late baby boomers. What they started doing was, okay, guess what? We're going to have our professional life first. We're going to do well within our professional development and do what's best, because we don't want to see our parents struggle, because we grew up in a household where we didn't always have things to provide for our kids, because we had our kids at 18, 19, 20 years old, and we weren't able to provide them with all the great things. So what we've seen is a Generation X, I can speak volumes on this because I did the same thing. We didn't have our 7-year-old son. Well, he's 7 now, but I was 42, and my wife, she's going to hate me for saying this, she was 40. So therefore, we waited till we had professional bearing, our foundation, where we can now send our kid to private school. We can do all those things. And that's kind of what happened to your point. Now, what's going on is now we're coddling our kids. They're getting all the things that we didn't get growing up. And now that's where the shift has turned, because now it's, I can go to Johnny's baseball games because I'm going to get off at 3 o'clock and I'm going to go because I'm learning how to work remotely, or I'm learning to work with the boss because of work-life balance or a hybrid or whatever it is. So we're involved in the kid's life. And that was different from when we were growing up.
God, yes.
Heck, our parents, we're lucky if they showed up. And if they did, who knows?
1,000%. 1,000%. Oh, my God. You have nailed that one.
That's the big difference. So that's where things started happening, to where the professional development of us waiting till we were older to have kids. Now we have resources. So now, you know, now we're going to have the kid in our house until we're 60, versus the old days where you're kicking your kid out before you're 38.
So I just want you to know that I tell all my children, Doc, and between my wife and I, we have 8 of them. The oldest is 30. The youngest is 7 or 6. I've told all my children when they graduated from high school, Samsonite or Seabag, but you got to go. And they're like, and my kids know Samsonite means dad's going to buy me the nicest piece of Samsonite he can. I have one that went in the Coast Guard. I have one that I bought a $250 piece of Samsonite for. You can't stay here. It's not personal, but you got to figure it the hell out. But now I want to stay with what you're saying. So we can all talk about, and we're going to get into, well, how do you keep those folks motivated? What's different for them? And I was looking forward to this conversation, because I've, in my prior life in staffing for the Marine Corps, we used to get briefings on how do you sell to them, or how do you, millennials, but we can all talk about, you know, oh, they're lazy, they're this, they're that, they're this, they're that. I mean, especially now, millennials are here, folks. Suck it up. They're way deep into the workforce. But what are some of the positives, before we get into beating them up and all this, what are some of the positives that came from that generation that we're seeing, like, hey, did you know that this generation is more this or that?
Yeah, and the biggest difference is, as much as I hate to admit it, they are extremely intelligent, very resourceful. They are going to work smarter, not harder. We grew up in, you know, the old hard knocks of doing things. They're not going to do that. And part of the thing is they want to have work-life balance. That's a big, big, you know, concern. They want to be part of something special. They don't want to just earn a paycheck. I mean, we can go into all the environmental aspects, environmentalists. We can go into diversity, inclusiveness, all of this different stuff that we never even thought of as Generation X, baby boomers. We showed up, worked our 12 hours a day, came home, had dinner waiting for us, had our slippers put on our shoes, or maybe I'm quoting an episode of My Three Sons, but that was that was the reality of what it was like then. But now it's all about this generation and Generation Z after them. They just continue to get more intelligent. Why? Because they know more about everything before the age of 6 than we knew at the age of 16.
They're exposed to it. All right, Tom. Yes, Tom. We need the boomers to get out of government. Why we have two octogenarians running to run the country, and both of them are being fed tapioca pudding at night. I'm absolutely with you. We have pick one. Do you want Nancy Pelosi, who never made more than $179,000 a year in her life, but is worth $120 million? Tom, do you want to talk about that one? Or do we want to talk about, you know, the whack job down in Florida, the Florida governor who forgot that, like, hey, just because all the Republicans from New York fell down there into Florida doesn't work. Average age of Congress is 67. Look, I'm with you. You know, what's the average age of a railroader right now, Tom? He's on the railroad, so I harass him. But you're absolutely right. So they are. They're a work smarter group. I also, from my stuff, I want to throw this out there. If I remember, they're very team oriented millennials. Yep. They were brought up on the team. They're more about the team than the individual. They're more about collaboration than a Gen X, where we were kind of like, just give it to me, I'll get it done. They're more about like, okay, what's the team that we're putting together? Who's best suited for this? Who specializes in this? We're very like, yeah, that dude's an ass. I'm not going to deal with him. Just give it all to me. I'll do it. Any other things that like, and as far as the Gen Zs, they're a bunch of whiny bitches and I don't have anything for them. Like, I can't figure them out at all. I'm an old fart for a minute, but I can't figure them out. What's their deal?
Well, first of all, Gen Zs, they're not much different than millennials. As much as we hate to think there's a big difference between the two, they have a lot of similarities, but they have few differences. And part of it is due to they're basically offsprings of the older millennials. And there's, you know, so you're starting to see that coddling, all of those same things. But I'll tell you, you know, Gen Zs, they want to make money. They want to make money on YouTube. They want to make money doing TikTok videos. They want to do all of these different, they want to start their own businesses. I think it's about 60% of them want to start their own businesses and don't want to work for companies. Why? Because companies are disloyal. They don't care about them. They know they don't care about them. So it's one of those things where that's where, as an employer and a leader, we have to do different things that are going to allow for them to want to be part of companies. Because right now, they would much rather run their own businesses, and they know the struggle behind it. I mean, trying to run your own business is hard, but they would rather do that than work for a money-hungry, non-caring about the climate, doesn't care about the environment. They think they only care about themselves. And if that's the case, they don't want to work for, you know, those type of companies.
Well, then let's get into that. And again, folks, if you want to see what Jason's got going on, Jason Wiggins, PhD.com, see what he's got. Tom says the average age of a male railroader is 41.6, females 44.1. If you want a good job, folks, I don't care what no one says, go get on the railroad. You can still retire, join at 30, retire in 30 years with a full pension. But what are some of the things that when you're going in and you're working with companies that are saying to you, hey, we're either having issues firing or not firing, but hiring. And I think probably more retaining that work. Cause I just heard this recently and I'd love to get your feedback on it. Our generation always heard, hey, people change jobs every 5 years. They're now, because of some of these social media links, Gen Zs and even millennials, younger millennials, are being told you should be changing work every 2 years because you're losing money by not moving every 2 years. And as an entrepreneur and talking with other entrepreneurs, FYI, folks, if you're changing jobs every 2 years, I'm not hiring you. I'm going to tell you you're a problem and you're not worth my effort to train. But I want to hear what you got to say, Doc. What are some of the things that you're experiencing with these employers, and how do you get them to kind of go, okay, this is how I can approach these folks?
Exactly. So to your point, you're absolutely right. The Gen Zs and millennials look at 1 year as long-term employment. And because what they think is, if I'm there for 1 year, I'm learning all these different elements of the job. So then I can take all those different sort of things I learned from the job, even if they were only one time, not that they came masters of it, but if they can utilize that and take it to somewhere else, and they think they're going to make more money. And so that's where that job hopping comes. So millennials, Gen Z are the job hoppers. Actually, Generation X kind of started that a little bit. They stopped working for employers for 20 years. So we were kind of at fault, as much as we hate to admit it. But now what we're seeing is that transgression of, to your point, 2 years. 2 years is, yeah, that's too long being a one company if you're a Gen Z or millennial.
Oh, and Tom says you're never going to get a raise to match inflation. Tom, I'm telling you, I worked with employers on the staffing side. They see 2 years in 2 years on a resume and they go, give me the next one. I don't want that resume. They don't.
Guess what? I'm going to tell Tom he's wrong. Tom, you're wrong. And the reason why is
because you got a PhD, Tom. I know you. You're going to argue. So come on.
And the reason why he's wrong is because if you're able to be one of those Gen Z and millennials that happens to get bypassed, me or you, the type that are looking at those resumes, we might be able to get a job that significantly pays more. It could be 10, 15, 20% more because they view our past experiences, what we've learned, how well we talk. And so what happens is, I've seen it a long time. The counter argument to all of this is, I work for organizations, when we hire from the outside, we pay much more than the person that continues to stay in the company and moves their way up. We take advantage of those people and hire brand new people right out of the workforce and pay them substantially more. Is right. It wrong? Probably. But they interviewed well. We looked at their total, what they bring to the table. And so that's where, you know, the counter argument to where I'm right with you. When I see a resume that's 1-2 years, I look the other way.
Yeah. I hope that generation figures it out. Anyone in a leadership role just looks at it and goes, you're a problem child. You're going to cause issues when you get here. Why are you leaving places so quickly? And if you tell them, well, I know I'll make more money. I'm coming to you because I'm going to make more money because I've been there 2 years and they're not going to pay me. The first thing that's going to come to mind to me is, so I'm not bringing you here just to do the same thing. I need you to stick around.
Exactly. And so that's the quandary as leaders that we run into. So I can look at it. I've kind of basically turned this thing upside down and I've shaken it several times. And I tried to look at it from the point of view of a Gen Z and you know, a millennial. And I can understand where it would make sense for them. But over the course of time, when you're in a HR leadership role, you see these resumes and you just shake your head and you realize, I'm not going to hire that person. But there are stupid people out there that will. So, I mean, what I would tell companies is, you want to retain your top talent. So it's important to stop rolling over and playing dead.
Because what's some of your advice then, though? I don't mean to cut you off, but what are some of the things that you're telling employers, or when you're working with employers, what are some of the steps that you're giving them to retain and to make that millennial and that Gen Z feel like, hey, I should stay here?
Exactly. So it really starts with the hiring process. the culture, how you bring them in. It's not the old way of just, you know, send a resume, you know, and what we grew up is you have to wear a shirt and tie. You have to wear all of that stuff to get ready for an interview. And that's kind of in our heads. But we have to realize that we have to get away from that as employers and hiring individuals. So all of a sudden, if somebody comes in a polo shirt, and as long as it's tucked in, don't get me wrong, it's tucked in, we have to say, you know what? We can't degrade this person for the way they look today when they come into this interview. You got to look at what substance they bring. How are they going to fit your culture? And that's an important element that some companies think. They think they can just hire, spit out. So if I'm telling a company, I'm going to say, well, first of all, tell me about your culture. What do you do well? What are the things that you feel highlight what you do for your employees? And if they sit there with a deer in a headlight look, you know you're going to have a nice consulting bill. But if they...
Oh, you don't understand how to do that? Tell me more.
Exactly. So, and then at that point, you look at them and you say, okay, so if they have some idea of some of the things they're going to do, you know, employee engagement, you know, making sure they have team type of activities, you know, causes that they participate in, that they invest in. Again, Gen Z and millennials, they like to be part of something special. They want to be part of important causes. That's, trust me, companies don't do all this volunteer work because they want to do it. They do it because that's what their employees want. And that's the Generation Y and the Generation Z. They're demanding that when they come to work for somebody, they want to help the environment. They want to help diversity. It's not a, you know, they want to work with, you know, like-minded, like people that view the same things that are important to them as well. And so that's where you put a culture together that assimilates everything that they want. And the one thing that's the most important that is not that important is salary. Believe it or not, making the most money is not going to keep a Gen Z and millennial. Does it help? Sure, we're human. But what's important to them is how does the company value what I offer? How do they view me as somebody that can move up? What are the opportunities in the future for promotions, to learn new tasks, to be a greater part of the organization? And so that's why the one thing I would talk to companies when we discuss, I would say one of the things you really want to point out is, you know, do you promote within or do you hire from the outside? And most companies will tell you that they hire from the outside, but they will say, well, it's because we don't have anybody that we felt is qualified. So whose fault is that? Did you offer them opportunities to advance their skills? Did you give them extra classes? Did you have some sort of, learning aspect of the next position for them? So like a lot of these large companies, they'll have basically learning environments where they'll set you in, if you're a future general manager or whatever the case is, they'll put you in this long line of activities and structure to get you to be a general manager one day by providing you all of the learning capabilities you need to be a new general manager, wherever that may be. And that's the same thing that companies need to realize is I need to invest in my employees. We got to stop the circular factor where, you know, you hire them, you chew them up, spit them out, and hire the next person. So that's kind of where the shift really needs to be. So when I'm talking to potential clients or clients, I'm sharing with them that we have to focus on the employees, what's important to them, how can you motivate and retain top talent? Because the most costly aspect of a business is losing talent. For example, you know, a loss of a talented executive can cost an organization 2 to 3 times the amount of that individual's 1 year salary in order to replace them. Not just because of all of the recruiting and all of the aspects, and you're probably going to have to pay more for the position on top of it. And you're also going to have to, you're going to lose some of that knowledge that they had. So you lose knowledge, you lose that person there. Here's the key thing. It also hurts the culture, because when you have a culture that is continuous of losing good talent, top talent, all the other employees see this and they go, what's wrong with Sean's company? Why are they leaving?
Right.
Is it Sean? Is it something else they're doing within the company? Maybe I need to look. Maybe I need to find a new opportunity because all my coworkers are leaving.
Everybody else is jumping ship. Why don't I?
Exactly.
And Tom's, he had mentioned that you were going back to his point. He said job jumping, just because he just confirmed most companies don't hire up from within and hire from outside. Hence, it's better than current environment jump. Well, what you missed also, Tom, because you caught that part, is you missed that, hey, if they want to retain, then they, one of the things he teaches companies is you must have programs to train those employees. If a person's already been there long enough, you need to find a program, see how you can train them, see how you can move them up, see how you can keep them. This reminds me, and it's funny that you brought that up, Doc, is my aunt, she might be 80, but she started off as a bank teller, and when she retired, she was the VP of East Coast ATM operations for Citibank. And I remember asking her one time, well, how did you get there? She said, Sean, I couldn't do my job. I couldn't hold my job today if I went looking for it. It requires a master's degree. She went and did what I think one of the skill sets that we've lost is she started off doing the job. They needed somebody to learn ATM machines. So she volunteered to learn ATM machines when they were coming out. She kept learning. When they needed somebody else, she just kept learning anything that they would offer. Because like you said, they offered it, so she took it on. But I'm going to say the flip side to it is, I don't know if, I think, I am privy to our generation, Generation X, if you offered me a schooling, I'm going to go take it.
Yep.
I think early millennials are the same way. But I think a lot of the later millennials and Gen Zs do exactly what you said, which is, why? Why should I take this? I'm just taking this for your benefit. It's not helping me. Before they ever go, well, let me go take this school and move on. So how do we, there's got to be some happy medium ground. I mean, and this, folks, feels already like a show that I could do for about 3 hours. How do we get that happy medium ground where we teach a person who's coming from that question everything generation that, you know, we turn on social media today and somebody could be like, hey, wow, man, this dog won the dog show and he was a mutt. Somebody would be like, that's a Chinese dog. It's a terrorist dog. Like, nobody would be like, man, that's a great story. We question everything right away. How do we start to change that mindset of just do it first and then come back and ask me questions?
Let's also look at technology. As I preface this, technology, all the social media sites, offer instant gratification. So instant gratification is what employees are expecting. They may say they're not expecting it, but they're expecting it. So the way we kind of move forward is you basically set up the program with, you know what, for example, we're going to set you up with this, but then we're going to tell you all the whys. This is how it's going to benefit you. This is what this could lead to if you finish the program. And then you'll be able to reap these rewards. And that's part of the, okay, so you're going to work with me as I go along. But here's the key thing. This is where baby boomers, Generation X, can work really well with millennials and Generation Z. We let them mentor us. So what's happened is now you say, okay, let's do some reverse. I mean, this is obviously you're not telling them this, but talking to your audience and you do reverse mentoring. So now you say, okay, you're going to go through this program, but what I'd like you to do is I'd like you to show me, you know, how this can help improve me. So by you going through this program, I think you're going to find some really great points that I don't know. I just come from the old scheme of learning as I go, but right. I haven't been updated in all of these new type of programs and leadership things. So you can help me. So they love the word help and helping you. And so therefore you really get to, you get to also benefit by at least pretending that right. you want them to really mentor you. Of course, you know everything. You don't need them to mentor you, but it will make them feel good. So these are the things that businesses are starting to learn that, okay, this both of these generations are extremely intelligent. And so they're going to see through the BS. They're going to see if you're trying to pull the wool over their eyes. The blanket is going to get thrown off. This is not a Linus situation. They are going to realize it quickly. So that's why you have to be more savvy and play at their level. And also, don't play as their boss. Gen Z and millennials, you are not a boss. You are part of the team. You are a co-collaborator. You are somebody that's going to help them, or they're going to help you. So if you sit there and say, I'm the hierarchy, bow down to me, this is my bar, well, that's not going to work with them. They're going to say, oh, don't worry, I'm just going to shut the door on you and go to the next bar.
Right.
Therefore, that's key right there, is as a good leader, you have to realize you have to check your ego in at the door, because that's what they expect. They don't want a hierarchy. They want a partnership. And that's what I would also tell companies, is don't lean on your hierarchical of how you do things. This is not the 60s anymore. This is about how can you work together towards a common goal.
I love that. And two things that I kind of take from what you're saying, and Tom says he agrees with your plan, but he sees it as a minority, and that is, it is a minority, Tom. The idea is that Dr. Jason's trying to get companies to understand that we need to go back to this mindset of providing for training and all these things for people. But one of the things that I had to learn, and when I came out of the service, and I think it's kind of two-sided of what you've said here, is I came from an environment of you had to, Tom says, send you over to Amtrak. It won't work. There are too much bureaucrats over there. One of the things that I had to learn was I came from an environment of I needed to show you what I knew so that you knew I wasn't incompetent. Being in the Marine Corps, that was my job, is I had to show you what I knew. Then I got on the railroad, before, which is where Tom and I met, and I learned quickly that I needed to act like an idiot, even though I knew my job, and let you think you taught it to me. Then you thought I was the greatest thing since sliced bread. Because you would be like, oh, let me show you how to do that. And I'd be like, okay. And then when it was all said and done, people would be like, that dude's pretty good. You know, I showed him how to do that. Bitch, you didn't show me nothing. I already knew how to do it. But that is, it's interesting that you bring that up. But we're close to closing the bar here. I wanted to bring this up. When you were talking about, you know, and it just dawned on me, that 60s, generation, that baby boomer generation, they were, a lot of them served in the military. They came from that environment of go follow your orders. When the task is done, you can come back and talk to me about it. I don't have time to talk to you right now. Do you think that because of the different shifts in military and things like that, we don't have those people in the same leadership roles that we used to have them in, that we've lost that in the workforce? And how does that affect training people? Because as somebody who did 20 years, I'm used to being trained. I can be trained for whatever you want me to learn. I can learn it. I have no issues with that. But have we learned, have we lost that element in the workforce?
We have, because let's look at it this way. There was a lot, it was more rigid, less flexibility. Now we are looking at flexibility in anything and everything we do, because now we have the hybrid work environments. We got the remote work environments. We have the basically the come to work 4 days a week, and then on the fifth day you can stay home. Or they've even talked about 32-hour work weeks now. Pretty soon you're just going to get a paycheck with no hours. You know, you're going to get paid.
What is that? That's got a name. That has a name. Sacramento, California actually implemented it. What the heck is the name of that, Doc?
I don't know. Right now, you know, a cheeseburger meal costs you $20 now here.
Crazy.
It's got crazy, but that rigid environment, you know, that, you know, maybe we were grown into with our baby boomer parents, it's all flexibility now. And so that's why we're seeing a revolt. You know, they had the mass resignation a couple of years back. And why? Because people are not going to withstand what they deem as negative treatment. And there's something better out there, because the pandemic also taught what we already kind of knew was businesses care about profit first, people second. That's how employees view that. Now, as you know, as business owners, you know, obviously we have a different perspective, but when it comes back to profit first, people second, that's where it's like, why am I loyal? And that's kind of where the military, you're very loyal, you're rigid, you follow the way things are done, and the way you're told to do it. And if you're told to learn it, you learn it. Now it's about, okay, how is it going to be best suited, and the flexibility, and how can I provide for my family while still be able to spend time with my family and do the things that are important? And that's where, as employees, they set the boundaries of what they're willing to accept and what they're willing not to. And as employers, we have to bridge the gap. Where do we identify where we're able to give up and we're also able to gain? And if we're able to figure out what that balance is, then we're going to keep employees, we're going to be able to retain them, and we're going to see a successful culture within our organization.
Now, do you have like four employers, a top five or a top 10 or any kind of checklist of like, hey, this is your checklist of dealing with these generations or working with them? Like, these are the things that you need to implement, and here's why. Do you have a starting checklist for them?
Yeah. And one of the number one is work-life balance. That is number one. And the ability to recognize their work. They want, like I said, social instant gratification. Is they want recognition for their work, making sure they have opportunities for future growth. If they don't feel like they're going to get anywhere within the organization, then they're not going to want to stay with you. And then the aspect of work is important. And then what did I mean by that? It means what's important about the work. What are you doing as a company that benefits others? You have to find individuals that want to do certain things. And by promoting what the cause of your work is, that really motivates them to want to be part of something special, which also means salary may not be a key focus for them. And then one of the other things is making sure you continuously give them the tools that will help them create additional job responsibilities. Don't just give them tasks to give them tasks. They see that a mile away. Give them opportunities to demonstrate that they can be something that's going to really help the company and value the work that they have done. So those are some of the key aspects that I talk about. And I also mentioned it in my book, is making sure that they understand this is kind of the foundation. It's like when you're building a house, you have to have a foundation that's going to support what you're building. And it all starts with building, obviously, a profitable company, but you have to build a culture that assimilates some of those ideas that I just mentioned.
Now, you kind of mentioned something. And look, folks, again, I've said it over and over and over on this one, because what I think Jason's doing, Dr. Jason Wiggins, to me, this is such a huge thing. We've had people on talking about different types of leadership styles and motivating your employees and all this. But you really kind of gearing down and drilling down on that. Hey, there is a difference between a baby boomer. I hate that term boomer. It's such a, I feel it's so disrespectful to that entire generation. You know, it's such bullshit, but you know, how to deal with them and dealing with millennials and Gen Z. I mean, check out what he's got going on. Read his book, How to Retain and Motivate Millennial Leaders. You're missing out on an opportunity if you're not taking and doing that. You also have the podcast. I don't want anybody to miss what you got going on. How often are you doing your podcast, and where can people find it?
Yeah, usually they're about once a week, and you can find it on any of your podcast platforms. And what I always say, it's for anything that pertains to Gen Z and millennials, personally and professionally. And there's always a motivational spin, because part of my background is being excited. You could probably even tell in my words. I love talking about it. I love doing it. And it's, at the end of the day, it's about making an environment where people can create a better life for themselves.
I mean, and folks, I'm going to give him a plug right now. I have a lot of guests on. And one of the things I love is you can tell a good guest who knows how to give and take, and that just doesn't ramble on. And Doc, I appreciate you so much. You're a good, great guest as a great giver taker when it comes to these conversations. And his podcast is Millennial Expert Podcast. So make sure it's your motivational Gen Z and Millennial Expert Podcast. Make sure you're downloading, giving him likes, giving him shares, doing the same thing here. Now, I don't know where Nate's at. Nate normally pops up by now, so I'll take her and Nate's question, and I know he's going to take it. Do you have any? I have my own question, and then I have Nate's question because I know it's going to come up. Is there anything from a break? We're going to talk about the break room for a minute. I think the break room is a very important place. Is there any snacks that you think, for a Gen Z or millennial, have to be in the break room to make them happy? Is it like for me, if you had like Swedish Fish or Sour Patch Kids, you would make me happy, but I'm an old fart, but really you would make me really happy because I'm from the Mid-Atlantic if you had Tasty Cakes. But is there anything that you feel they have to be in there for a Gen Z or millennial?
Well, I would say a Pop-Tart, but I'd be kind of joking.
Wait a second. Here's the question about Pop-Tarts. This is very important. Do you toast your Pop-Tarts and put butter on them?
Absolutely not.
What is wrong with you? Doc, I'll kick you.
Put butter on them? You know what I would say, though? In all seriousness,
Tom says you're a great guest. You know what's up. And I seriously hope you're successfully changing the culture of the workplace. Look, and Tom, Tom was my partner for like forever. He knows. Pop-Tarts get butter on them. Toasted Pop-Tart with butter. Doc, if you do this, you send me a message. You do it one time, it'll change your life. It'll change your entire life. All right, go ahead. So what were you going to say about Pop-Tarts? No. Pop-Tarts in the break room?
What I would, in all seriousness, what I would do is I'd have like a TV that just has rolling TikTok videos, you know? Yeah. That way you just keep seeing them. And then you have, again, the important part of the break room. In all seriousness, you have to have snacks. You have to have those certain things that are in addition to their work environment. So it is important to have a type of atmosphere where you are really catering. You have a toaster. You have a microwave. You have a working fridge. I mean, when I say this, it's, you know, you go back 10, 20 years, they didn't have any of that in a break room.
Be happy it was clean.
No. So you want to recognize that you have a place where you value the employees. You have your employee recognition stuff all over the place. You have common themes. You have opportunities for volunteer work. You have all of this stuff, and that is really going to make or break your break room.
And see, that's important. See, I think the break room is an important place in every work environment that kind of gets forgotten. It gets handed to HR and they're like, here, you guys deal with this, go buy snacks or whatever. With everything you've been telling us, Doc, and I love the mindset and the energy to this. I got to play a little bit of a devil's advocate for our last question before we get ready to close everything down. What is the one thing on the flip side that you would tell to that millennial or Gen Z to say, hey, you've got to stop this. This is where your problem, because we talk a lot about the older generation. You don't understand us. What is the thing that you're going to tell them? Like, hey, pause. This is what you don't get.
Well, first of all, I would say, wake the bleep up. But
well, they're all woke. Just ask them. They'll tell you. They're
but all no, in all seriousness, what I would say with them is, if you're running a business that you wanted to be profitable, what things would you do differently? And think about running the business 30 years ago. How would you have ran the business? Not knowing what we know today. So think about that perspective before you condemn employers about how they run the business.
That makes perfect sense. Like, if it was yours, how would you run this? And you brought up, you brought this up a bunch of times. When do you think people will realize that your company isn't there to save the world? Like, I tell you right now, from my standpoint, I find it one of the most disrespectful things in the world when I go and I check out and they're like, would you like to round this up to $1 to save the sperm whales? And I'm like, you're a multi-billion dollar company that's owned by a $1 trillion conglomerate that I can't even imagine the money flowing through this place. Why am I giving you 75 cents? You guys could, like, FYI, folks, most of these companies, I think I saw the number not long ago. It was like 1 point something billion dollars could end hunger in the United States and homelessness, like end it like that. And we haven't, but you want my 75 cents. I know that sounds stupid. It's 75 cents. But how do you get them to understand? I know they claim it on their taxes, Tom. That's why we can't claim it on ours, but they claim it on theirs. Like, see, look, it was a donation and we don't get to claim it on ours, but they write it off. That's why I never give them money. But how do we change that mindset to let them know, like, hey, it's not your company's job to save the world?
And that right there is something we probably will never change, because it's just going to get predominantly worse to where, it's going to, I don't want to say all of a sudden it's going to be like employee-owned based companies, but it's almost, I think one day we're almost going to see like every company has like a profit sharing, to where the bottom line is depending on the organization and you're almost going to share the profits. I know that sounds crazy, but
no, I see think it.
One day that's going to be a significant possibility.
I see it a lot in small family-owned businesses that are in that, I call them small, but they're in that $10 to $15 million a year range, and they don't want to sell off to a PE or something like that. They would rather keep it family-run and start profit-sharing with their employees, which that becomes the new loyalty right there. Is if I own a portion of this company, why would I leave it? I'm just going to shit on all this money that I'm going to lose out on. I 100% agree with you. I know a company right now that's actually looking at that, and they're probably like a $5 or $6 million company. And they're like, hey, we can sell off to a PE, or we can profit share this to the employees within the company and retain people better than the revolving door of what we're dealing with right now.
The dynamics are shifting. That's for sure.
Profit sharing, democratically made corporate decisions, communism. It's not communism, Tom. It's not communism. Listen to me. Profit sharing just means you own a portion of the company. You don't get to make any decisions involved in it. You don't get to make any decisions involving it. If you're fired, shit on you. You'll forfeit what you have because there's going to be rules in there. Trust me, it's nothing democratic about it. It's just you're retained so that when you do leave, instead of me having to give you a pension, you have profits shared within the company that you can cash out when you leave on your own. And then I don't have to even contribute to your 401k. You contribute to your own and you take your money and you buy into my company. That's how that works. Trust me, I've looked into it completely. It works. It's like anything else. There's an angle to everything. Look, folks, I'm telling you right now, Dr. Jason Wiggins, PhD, is amazing. Check out jasonwigginsphd.com. Absolutely, you are welcome back here 100 times over. I think you and I could probably sit and talk all night there, Doc. Just absolutely a blast. Make sure you're checking his website out. If you found us through the Doc or us, Doc through us, make sure you like, share, follow. Put this out on all your social media. We had a lot of great people. I'm glad Tom hung out. Tom's one of the smartest guys I know. I love him to death. Make sure you're seeing what folks have going on. Any live talks or anything coming up? Any like TED Talk kind of things? Anything people can find you other than the podcast?
Not right now, but if you just go ahead and you Google Dr. Jason Wiggins, you'll find a plethora of either things I posted, articles, podcasts, other guest appearances. So if you want to consume all of me, which is a lot, there's a lot out there.
If you want to consume me, you care about you say shit.
No, I appreciate that. I appreciate everything. You've been great. It's like talking to a close friend. It's been a really pleasure on my end.
Look, Tom's out here like it was a joke. Listen, you millennial, you're lucky. I love you, brother. You got me all fired up on that one. Well, look, folks, make sure you join us next week. This is a good one here. So we have Adam Von Gottken. I probably pronounced Adam's name horribly because I suck at pronouncing names. But he is one of the half owners of HighClear. And HighClear is HighClere gin. Here's the cool thing there, Doc. HighClear is the real Downton Abbey castle. So he is a half owner of their gin, and we're going to have them on next week. This is the bottle right here. If you want to learn about how gin is made, what some of the history of gin is, make sure you're joining us next week. I just learned that the lavender that they use in their gin was planted by Bishop Winchester in the 9th century. It's got some history. My wife will probably be so mad at me, but I've got two different cigars from them. They have their own line of cigars. So we're going to have them on next week. Talking with Adam, I'm making all kinds of crinkly noises in the mic. I don't care, but we're going to have them on next week. Now, Doc, this is episode 230. And as we talked beforehand, I know you binged everything. You've inundated yourself every day. You told me your children were reciting lines from the show. It's just that much of your life right now. So you know what's coming up. But just in case, I'll remind you, as we always do, and please don't log off afterwards. I need to talk to you for just half a second here. As we do in every episode, the guest always gets the final word. So what's the final word, Doc?
The final word is make sure if you want to be the best, you got to train the best.
Alrighty, folks, be sure to push your stool in. This has been a Second Front podcast presentation found on Apple, Spotify, and wherever podcasts can be found.